One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Hi, this is Elena.
And this is Candace.
And you're listening to Cousins on Crime. So today, the story is going to be a little different from what we've been doing. It was suggested by one of our listeners. Do you know what it is, Candace?
I don't, but you're looking at me kind of funny.
It's the Jimmy Hoffa case.
Oh.
Have you heard of this?
Just when your mom suggested it.
Okay, so yes. I have never heard of it. It's a very popular story.
But I didn't look into it because I knew you were going to cover it at some point.
Okay, good. Well, I'm surprised I've never heard of it because it's a pretty fantastical, popular story. So Jimmy Hoffa, his given name is James Riddle Hoffa. He goes by Jimmy. He was one of the most influential American labor leaders in America. He was born on February 14th, 1913, in Brazil, Indiana. Mm. Growing up, he saw firsthand the challenges and hardships American workers faced. His father was a coal miner who died when he was still young. His mother went to work to support Hoffa and his three siblings, eventually moving the family to Detroit, Michigan. Hoffa had a limited education. It was said that he dropped out of school to work and help his family.
That was pretty common back then, though, right?
Yes. Yeah, it was. He went to work on a loading dock for Kroger grocery store. Yeah. This is where he conducted his first labor strike, helping his co-workers land a better contract. He used a shipment of strawberries as a bargaining chip.
Oh.
Yeah. Strategic. The workers wouldn't unload until they had a new deal. They got the nickname the Strawberry Boys. You know, I wonder what kind of name people would have make up for them these days.
I know.
This day and age.
That's so like the Strawberry Boys. I bet that was naughty back then.
So Hoffa married Josephine in 1936. The couple had two children together, Barbara and James P. Hoffa. He proved to be a natural leader and remained an advocate for oppressed workers for the rest of his life. In the 1930s, he got involved with the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. The Teamsters noticed the charisma and talents as a local organizer and was carried up through the ranks. So Teamsters, if you don't know, they organized truckers across the country, and through the use of strikes, boycotts, and some more powerful and not so legal methods of protest.
Mm-hmm.
So Hoffa was ambitious and aggressive. He worked hard to expand the union's membership and negotiate better contracts by any means necessary. His efforts paid off in 1952 when he became the vice president of the entire union.
Wow.
Hoffa became president of the Teamsters in 1957 when its former leader was imprisoned for bribery.
Hmm.
So, sounds like a bunch of power mm-hmm. and wealth.
Yeah.
He was admired for his tireless work to expand the union and for his devotion to the organization's members. One of his well-known quotes is, "You got a problem? Call me. Just pick up the phone."
Better call Saul. Better call Hoffa.
There you
go.
Was
he passing out preloaded cell phones?
In 1957,
Or telegrams, so, I don't know, whatever it was back in that day. I just made myself sound so stupid, but that's okay.
Get with the times. <I know. laughs> In 1964, he negotiated the National Master Freight Agreement, which covered over 450,000 truck drivers and was described as a milestone for labor unions everywhere. Hoffa's dedication and public speeches gained him popularity among his fellow workers and the politicians and businessmen. However, it was said that he also had a dark side. Dun, dun, dun. So during this time, some Teamster leaders collaborated with the mafia in racketeering, extortion, and embezzlement.
Okay.
Hoffa himself had relationships with high-ranking mobsters and was the target of Attorney General Robert Kennedy.
Okay.
There were several government investigations throughout the 1960s, but he managed to avoid prosecution for many years.
Okay. As they did.
Right, because, you know,
power.
Power,
prestige.
And it's all about who you know. In 1967, he was convicted of bribery and jury tampering and was sentenced to 13 years in prison.
Jury
so it finally
tampering.
Caught up to him.
Like,
yes, because in trials, because Attorney General Robert Kennedy, or Bobby Kennedy, charged him several times to try to, he actually formed a task force called the Get Hoffa Task
Force. Wow.
Yeah, so there were several trials that they went through, so now he's convicted of bribery and jury tampering for trying to get the jury to, you know, see his side.
Mm-hmm.
So he was sentenced to 13 years in prison, also because of a conviction of misusing funds from the union's pension plan.
See, you can just figure out how to make up charges.
Yeah.
And this is what's frustrating in, you know, like the Colin Davis case. Why not try them for anything you can to get to stick, you know?
Exactly.
He obviously had evaded a whole bunch of other charges. So, yeah, maybe he got 13 years, which is not nearly as much as he probably should have. But still, got him on something.
But this is big time. This is the FBI with Attorney General Bobby Kennedy. Mm-hmm. So, So after serving 4 years of the 13-year sentence, President Richard Nixon commuted Hoffa's sentence in 1971.
Why?
Well, Hoffa had a friend, Frank Fitzsimmons, who covered his presidential position in the union. Uh-huh. And Fitzsimmons became pretty good friends with Nixon. And
The good old boy system. Gotcha.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So he talked Nixon into this, and also I think it was said that Nixon was up for re-election and he wanted to look good, letting this big... He thought if he let this mobster or, you know, union guy out, that he would have more people on his side. Oh, and there was a condition put on the release for Hoffa that he was not able to participate in union activities until 1980.
Wow.
Which was really weird because usually when you were commuted like that, you didn't get stipulations or conditions put on your release.
I thought you were going to say something like he just couldn't murder anyone.
Well, no, that wasn't stated. So
okay. So that's up for grabs.
Yeah. But I think he also put that condition on there because he was friends with Fitzsimmons, and Fitzsimmons really wanted to keep his position as president. But
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, but Hoffa was planning to fight the restriction in court, so he wanted back.
That's a bit greedy. They let you out of prison, bruh. Just chill.
Take what you
can. Yeah, exactly. You get to go to Chick-fil-A now, okay? Instead of prison swap.
So on the afternoon of July 30th, 1975, Hoffa left his home, telling his family that he was going to meet someone at Machu's. It's M-A-C-H-U-S. Machu's Red Fox Restaurant in Bloomfield Township, Michigan. Well, he never returned home.
Oh?
He gone. His dark green two-door 1974 Pontiac Grandville was still in the restaurant parking lot, and he was last seen standing in front of the restaurant.
Oh.
Hoffa's son flew in from vacation with his wife, and he was on vacation with his wife and kids. He flew home to Detroit. Hoffa's daughter flew in from her home in St. Louis, Missouri. On the next morning, July 31st, his family filed a missing persons report to Bloomfield Township Police. The only thing that the family was able to tell the police is that he left their home at 11 a.m. to meet somebody at 2 p.m. at the restaurant. He called home at 2:30, stating that the party never showed and that he will be home at 4, but he never returned home.
Was it that far away from his house, like 2 hours?
I think so. I didn't find anything definitive on that.
Or 3 hours?
But that's the way a few of the reports made it seem, was that it was kind of a drive to this restaurant.
And I have another question. When you say his family like flew back, was it because they couldn't locate him?
Yes.
Okay.
Because I'm not sure how it all happened, but mm-hmm. I'm assuming their mom, Josephine, had called them saying that her dad never returned home. She can't.
Gotcha.
She didn't know what happened to him, you know.
Uh-huh.
So that same day, they just flew in and they were on it looking for their dad.
Yeah, that's quick action.
So police searched an area in the Middle Rouge Parkway for more than 2 hours with no signs or clues. Some speculated that Hoffa faked his own death. They said he withdrew about $1.2 million from the Teamsters pension fund and fled. But James P. Hoffa, his son, was adamant that the money was never taken and his dad would never leave his family. And actually, his son was a lawyer and did a lot of his legal stuff for him.
Oh.
And so he kind of knew what was going on with the funds and stuff. So mm-hmm. he was like, no, that didn't happen.
Yeah.
So during his career, Hoffa made plenty of enemies, you would think, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Marvin the Weasel Elkind was Hoffa's driver. Marvin was only 18 when he became his driver. He would be in this position for 5 years. He worked at a restaurant before this, and one day his boss came to him and told him, "You'll no longer be working for me. You're going to be the driver for Jimmy Hoffa."
Oh, okay. Thanks for letting
me
know.
He knew. Yeah, he said he knew of Hoffa, but he didn't know him, and he was pretty nervous.
Mm.
He said he was fearful 100% of the time that he worked for Hoffa.
Oh, I would be too.
The first time he met Hoffa, Hoffa told him, "What you hear in the car stays in the car. And if I hear that you told anyone, you won't be around the next day."
Dude, can you imagine? That would be
being 18. 'Cause
what if he heard something around town and thought, only my driver could have said this? And, oh, that's scary.
So he set the stage he set that fear into him real quick.
Uh-huh.
The next player is Anthony Jackalone. He went by Tony Jack. He was high-ranking in the mob, and he was a friend of Hoffa for many years. Investigators speculated that he was the somebody that Hoffa was going to meet at the restaurant the day he disappeared. But Tony Jack denied having any plans of meeting with Hoffa.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
He would.
I mean, I would lie. He says he was at an athletic club at the time of the luncheon meeting.
Okay.
Friends say that Hoffa said the meeting was also supposed to include Anthony Provenzano, who goes by Tony Pro. So we have
lots Tony of Tonys.
Yeah. So Tony Pro and Leonard Schultz, both also involved in organized crime, denied these plans. It's reported that Tony Pro believed that Hoffa aided in him getting additional time while in prison for extortion.
Oh.
So there's his motive, you know.
Uh-huh.
A YouTube documentary talked about Hoffa and Tony Pro getting into a physical altercation at a hotel room meeting. They both had a grip on each other's throats until someone stepped in and broke them apart.
Oh, my.
Serious business. The next player is Frank Fitzsimmons. We'll go back to him. He and Hoffa were close associates. However, the union was split between Hoffa loyalists and Fitzsimmons loyalists.
Mm-hmm.
Fitzsimmons became president of the Teamsters when Hoffa had to quit in 1971 due to the restrictions from President Nixon. And even though Fitzsimmons was a key player in persuading Nixon to release Hoffa, Hoffa sought to unseat Fitzsimmons to regain the union presidency.
Mm-hmm.
And Fitzsimmons says, yes, they had their differences, but they have been friends for many years, and there was no power struggle.
Oh, Fitzsimmons did it.
However, they were so power hungry that they planted car bombs to scare each other off.
What?
Reportedly.
That's not like a joke.
No.
Slapping each other's butt in the locker room.
No,
that's
it's like
car bombs.
Yeah. And reports said from other people who were in the mob, like that worked for the big bosses, they said mm-hmm. it was just little things, things that they knew that nobody was going to be in the car,
oh,
so
please.
Nobody was getting hurt. It was just
come
to
on.
Scare them.
I guess that's how they do it in the mob. It was just a silly car bomb.
Back in the day. The next player, Hoffa took in a 3-year-old boy named Charles, who goes by Chucky O'Brien.
Aww.
When Chucky grew up, he became Hoffa's bodyguard and a Teamster organizer. Accusers say that Chucky recently shifted allegiance to Frank Fitzsimmons. However, he denied any change in his loyalty.
So did he adopt him?
Chucky, he did.
He adopted him.
Well, I don't know if he legally adopted him.
But he raised him?
His foster son.
Oh, okay.
He raised him since he was 3.
Okay.
But yeah, the report said his foster son. It never said anything about him legally adopting.
And he just got him somehow. I wish it was that easy these days to just get a 3-year-old and
right
just
here,
take
just
in a 3-year-old.
Hand him over. Well, you know, there's that black market thing.
Oh, yeah.
We can get into that whole story another
oh, yeah.
day, but
let's do it.
So Chucky originally said that he was at the athletic club with Tony Jack at the time of the disappearance. And then later he said he was using Joe Jackalone's car to make a delivery at the time of the disappearance. So he had two different stories.
Okay.
So Joe Jackalone, he's the son of Tony Jack, Anthony Jackalone.
Mm-hmm.
He had his car seized by federal agents, and they found blood stains in the front seat.
Ooh.
He told investigators that it was fish blood. How
what?
Convenient.
Come on.
So the story goes, Chucky O'Brien, the foster son, he said he used the car to deliver a 40-pound frozen salmon to the wife of another Teamster official.
Okay, you had a fish riding shotgun.
A frozen 40-pound salmon. So he was delivering this fish to another Teamster official's home on the same day of the disappearance, and the blood leaked from the package.
Gross.
He said he took the car to a car wash to have them clean it up, and the feds checked with the manager of the car wash, and the manager of the car wash denied having any record of this transaction.
Mm.
However, they did confirm that a salmon was delivered to the Teamster official's home, Investigators did confirm that the blood was not human blood through chemical analysis. Furthermore, in another search of the car, agents found a 12-gauge pump-type shotgun and 24 shotgun shells.
Spent shells?
No.
Oh, okay.
The FBI test-fired the gun, and the pellets in the gun were retained for comparison in the event that Hoffa's body is found.
Ah, good thinking. Yeah.
There was also Frank Sheeran. He
lots of Franks.
Yes.
Lots of Tonys.
Tonys and Franks. Yes. he was a truck driver and a meat delivery man, and eventually started driving for the mob and a close confidant to Hoffa. Sheeran is a self-proclaimed hitman and killed as many as 30 people for Hoffa.
Oh.
And just another tidbit, I saw an article that said that Ed Sheeran is a distant nephew to Frank Sheeran.
Okay. I'm digging this.
Uh-huh. There was also the feud between Hoffa and Attorney General Bobby Kennedy. It said that they hated each other. I watched a documentary that had former mobsters talking about how they all cheered when President Kennedy was assassinated. Isn't that terrible?
Ooh, yikes.
Some say that Hoffa had a part in the assassination because they were all happy about it.
Ooh, was he on the grassy knoll?
No, he wasn't there. They were in a restaurant in Detroit or okay. New York. I can't remember. Either one of those. They were at a restaurant, and when the news came on and said it, they all cheered.
Wow.
So it was speculated that Hoffa had ordered the hit. At various times, Barbara Crancer, so Mrs. Barbara Crancer is Hoffa's daughter, she criticized the involvement of the FBI, stating, "You used 2,000 agents to put my father in jail, and up to now, you have only used 2 agents to try to find him."
Yeah, good point.
So
they probably thought he's dead.
Yeah, like we'll leave it be.
He's off our hands.
We hated him, mm-hmm. And that's the kind of thing that I think she was insinuating is maybe she was accusing them of playing a part in her father's disappearance, so they didn't have to deal with him anymore.
Good point.
So at that time, investigators had 8 suspects: Tony Pro, Tony Jack, Russell Buffalino, Charles O'Brien, Frank Sheeran, Salvatore and Gabriel Bruguglio, and Thomas Andretta.
And Joey Botafuco. I was just waiting for you to say Joey Botafuco. Oh my gosh. Sorry.
So the last 3 men mentioned worked for Tony Pro. I think they were his hitmen. Some of these men were convicted on separate charges, but they were never charged in the disappearance due to insufficient information and evidence.
Right, because the fish blood, that's not going to do it.
All their stories panned out.
Mm-hmm. This is not their first rodeo.
Frank Sheeran, he's the one that says he murdered or killed 30 people for Hoffa. Like, apparently he was really good at his job because nobody ever found these 30 people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and there's nothing. I'm sure they had this whole, fish thing already planned. So I'm going to get this fish.
Right, exactly.
They're going to find fish blood in the car, and then they're going to look elsewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I'd do.
If only I was that smart to think of something like that. But I will never murder anybody.
Right.
Okay, I'm just going to put that out
Same.
There. Let's put that on the record. some also believe the motive for the murder was because Hoffa was standing in the way of a $9 million loan from the pension fund that Tony Pro was pushing, but that was never proven. So apparently the Teamsters pension fund created a lot of loans to build up Las Vegas.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Little Vegas.
I thought that was an interesting. Mm-hmm.
Just so y'all know, me and Lena have matching tattoos that we got in Vegas recently.
Mm-hmm.
Just little,
you know,
little tie to us. We are tied to this story.
You know, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. That's what Hoffa said. What happens in the car stays in the car.
Oh,
you
yes.
see a connection?
I do. This is where they got the slogan. Their mission statement.
So there's so much more information and puzzle pieces that I'm sure I'm missing. I was going cross-eyed trying to read it, read everything. There's one of the links that I put in the show notes. It's the Vault FBI link. You can see all kinds of news articles from the time and investigation notes and pictures. So I was like, it was like 140 pages, and I just skimmed as best I could. So theories and tips. Both daughter Barbara Crancer and son James P. Hoffa have publicly campaigned for further investigation into their father's disappearance. And actually, today, Barbara is 84 years old, and she's a retired lawyer and judge.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yes, very impressive. And James P. Hoffa, he's now 81. He was a lawyer and also followed in his father's footsteps, serving as the president of the Teamsters Union beginning in 1998.
Wow. Isn't it interesting that both of his kids were lawyers?
Yeah. Yeah. Very successful.
Yeah. But like he was into some...
Right.
But they were lawyers.
You have to have somebody on your side, and who better than your kids?
Yeah.
I've seen movies, you know, I've seen movies of things like this where, I can't remember. So, several conspiracy theories have spread about his disappearance and the location of his remains, but the truth remains unknown. The most popular theory is that he was a victim of a mafia hit, but conclusive evidence has never been found. Some theories suggest that he was done in by organized crime or even federal agents. Over the years, authorities have received tips as to the location of Hoffa's remains, but his body has yet to be recovered. And one report it was a documentary, said that a lot of the tips of where his body may be was just to throw them off track. One theory was that he was in a Florida swamp. In 1982, self-described mafia murderer Charles Allen, who served prison time with Hoffa, told a U.S. Senate committee that Hoffa was killed on the orders of alleged New Jersey mob figure Tony Pro. His body was ground up in little pieces, shipped to Florida, and thrown into a swamp.
Wow.
The FBI never found enough evidence to support the claim, and questions were raised about Allen trying to sell the story to make money.
Well, either that or he was alligator poo, so they'll never find any evidence.
Yeah, that's a good cover-up. Mm-hmm. Not ever find anybody. Mm-hmm. Another theory is that he was buried by the Giants Stadium. In 1989, self-described hitman Donald Tony the Greek Frankos in Playboy magazine interview said Hoffa was buried under section 107 of the Giant Stadium in East Rutherford, New Jersey.
Which could be easily confirmed.
So the FBI found nothing to support the claim and did not follow up when the stadium was demolished in 2010.
Whoa! What?
Why did they not follow up? Because they had something to do with it?
Well, or either that or they were like, yeah.
Yeah, because when did I say that was? In 1989? So it'd been over 10 years.
Oh, yeah. They're like, dude, this guy's dead. We don't care where he's at.
Yeah. So then the next one is the Great Lakes. Former Hoffa aide and strong arm Joseph Franco, in the 1987 book called Hoffa's Man, he says Hoffa was abducted by either federal marshals or federal agents, driven to a nearby airport, and dropped out of the plane, possibly into the Great Lakes that surround Michigan.
Jeez.
Other than Franco's word, there was nothing to support the claim. The next one is Frank Sheeran, So before he died, he said that he killed Hoffa at a Detroit house and burned the evidence at a crematorium.
That's
he said
a good
he was
one.
Ordered, yeah. He said he was ordered by Russell Bufalino to take Hoffa out. Some say that he only said this to help his book sales at the time.
Okay. Because, buy my so book and please don't arrest me.
Well, so he wrote his book, his biography, and it didn't sell very well. He didn't have good success with it. So he tried to put it out again. And the second time is when he said he had killed Hoffa. He was trying to make money to support his family for when he was gone.
Okay.
The Bloomfield Township Police ripped up the floorboards at the house that he said he shot him at. In 2004, but the FBI crime lab concluded that blood found on the floorboards was not Hoffa's.
It was somebody else's. He buried somebody else there.
Can we figure out whose blood that was?
I know, yeah, like, that's, it's blood, but it's not his.
Maybe one of the other 30 men that Sharon killed.
Mm-hmm. Let's call up Ed. Let's interview Ed, see if he knows any of the deeds.
Does he have any family history about
this? He'll write a song about this.
So there was a movie made about Frank Sheeran called The Irishman. It was about him and the mobsters. And however, the real life characters of these men say that the movie did not depict or portray them very well.
Never do.
They said it was a good movie, but it just... it wasn't good history.
I enjoyed it. I give it 2 thumbs up, but that's not me.
Nice try. The next one is New Jersey Junkyard. So in 2006, a book called The Iceman, Confessions of a Mafia Contract Killer.
Ooh, I like it.
It states Richard Kuklinski received $40,000 for the slaying. It says that Richard, the Iceman Kuklinski, killed Hoffa in Michigan, drove the body to a New Jersey junkyard, sealed it in a 50-gallon drum, and set it on fire. He later dug up the body and put it in the trunk of a car that was sold as scrap metal.
Yikes.
The former chief and organized crime investigations for the New Jersey Division of Criminal Justice said that he doubted the claim. He said they took a body from Detroit, where they have one of the biggest lakes in the world, and drove it all the way to New Jersey. Come on. So he just didn't believe it. It doesn't say if he checked
it out. No.
The next one is a Bay County swimming pool. Richard C. Powell, who used to live in Bay County and who was serving life in prison, said Hoffa was killed and his body was buried beneath a swimming pool in Bay County's Hampton Township.
Ooh, that's where they got the idea for Ozark. Spoiler alert,
if you haven't
seen Ozark.
Yeah. That was so good.
Pretend you didn't hear that.
Ugh, I'm so... Now I'm sad.
I know. I did not like the way it ended.
I need it back. So police used a backhoe to demolish the pool and dig beneath it in 2003. No trace of Hoffa was found. At one point, police brought Powell to the scene handcuffed and shackled, and prosecutor Joseph K. told the Bay City Times that Powell didn't have any connection to Hoffa at all, and that the convict just wanted to have a few minutes of fame.
Okay, wait. The police dug up his pool, but they couldn't be bothered to just go through some rubble of a stadium that was already demolished.
Right. Well, okay, so that was...
Like, the work was done for them. You know what I mean? Like,
true, but that claim from the Giant Stadium was in 1989, and so now we're in 2003.
Maybe there's
more people or someone different on the scene.
People that weren't involved?
Exactly. Okay, so then...
We're not going to dig this up because we know he's not there, because that's not where we put him.
The next one is the Renaissance Center. In the 2011 book, The Weasel, a double life in the mob.
Ooh.
Marvin Elkind, or Elkind, I'm sorry, a self-described chauffeur and goon for the mob bosses.
He's
Yeah, I just put that in there because the report said goon, and I was like, yeah, I have to use that
yeah,
word.
Yeah, me too.
You goon. So he says, Hoffa's killers buried him beneath the 73-story Renaissance Center in downtown Detroit. The building, home of General Motors headquarters, it still stands, and the claim has never been taken seriously. Marvin says that once when walking by the Renaissance Center for a meeting, Tony Jack said, "Say hello to Mr. Hoffa, boys."
Whoa.
So he's convinced that his body is there.
You know, I mean, these days they could use probably ground penetrating radar.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of having to, knock down depending on where, I guess.
True. How far down and through concrete.
Yeah.
So then the next one is an Oakland barn. So Mafia Captain Tony Zerilli in the online Hoffa Found article says, Hoffa was buried in a makeshift grave beneath a concrete slab of a barn in Oakland Township, about 25 miles north of Detroit. In 2013, the FBI and police spent 2 days digging at the site that no longer had the barn, but found nothing. Zerilli was in prison for organized crime when Hoffa disappeared. But he claimed that he was informed about Hoffa's whereabouts after his release.
Mm.
In Zerilli's ebook, he says, Hoffa was hit in the head with a shovel and buried alive.
Brutal.
Yeah. A documentary states that the FBI got the coordinates wrong when they were digging. And so they dug in the wrong spot and didn't follow up to try to dig in the right spot.
Okay.
The next is a Jersey City landfill. Journalist Dan Muldea, who has written extensively about the Hoffa saga, he interviewed Frank Coppola. And Coppola, who died in 2020, says his father owned a Jersey City landfill and that Hoffa's body was delivered to him in 1975. Placed in a steel drum and buried about 100 yards away on a state property that sits below an elevated highway.
Oh.
And if you Googled Jimmy Hoffa, this is one of the most popular pictures of this bridge of where they went to dig in this landfill. But the FBI obtained a search warrant to do a site survey, but seems to be another fruitless search.
Well, it's a landfill.
Yeah. Metal has been piled on top.
And you know, when they do find bodies in a landfill, it amazes me because I'm like, how did you find, you know,
yeah,
what I'm saying?
Like
there have been cases where they, find a body in a suitcase or two suitcases with pieces of body. And it's just like,
wow.
How do you even find that?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It's amazing.
So, in the last thing I saw about what could a theory or a tip is in May of 2022, so not too long ago,
wow.
News reports say that there have been 2 instances of human remains being found at Lake Mead in Nevada. There was a drop in water levels due to a drought. The first body that was discovered in a barrel on May 1st along the newly exposed shoreline. Police said that the body was a man who had been shot probably between the mid-1970s and the early 1980s.
Okay.
They thought this because he was wearing shoes manufactured during that period.
Okay. Makes sense.
So authorities have not identified either remains.
Well, that was last month, May
yeah.
of 2022.
Right.
So generally forensic testing like that takes months
right.
to get back.
Right.
I would
exactly.
be interested.
So, I mean, there's hope
yeah,
there.
To know.
I mean, his kids are in his eight, in mm-hmm. their 80s. I hope that they get closure before, they pass on.
It was that the last, like the last theory?
Yeah, that was the last tip or theory that I have. Yeah, and that pretty much concludes my story. But I mean, what do
That's
you think?
Why I think so. You just going through all those theories just shows, like, they probably killed people like that. They probably were just making up, oh, I remember killing Tony Gillespie, you know, that way. So let's just say that we put his body in the back of a trunk and sold it for scrap parts or whatever. You know, like, I just, all of these theories were things that came from their brains. And it wouldn't surprise me in the least if
it really happened.
If all those things really happened just to, like, 50 different people.
Right. Exactly. Well, and I just gave all of you tips and tricks on how to get rid of a body.
Oh, my gosh.
So I kind of feel bad about that.
Well, the layperson is not involved in organized crime, so they probably would get caught if they attempted these things. But
yeah, you're probably right.
And that also, to be his kids, like, if I had all these different theories of where my father was buried, that would just go to show how many enemies he had.
Right.
And just how many people wanted him dead. It's sad.
It is.
For that to be, like, his legacy. Yeah,
I agree. But you know what? People are still talking about him today. You know, his name is still in people's mouths, so.
And we have come so far in the things that we can do. So
yeah, hopefully something comes
maybe
up.
There'll be a conclusion.
Yeah. Anyway.
We'll do an update if we get that information about who they found
Absolutely.
In Lake Mead. So there was two bodies.
Two bodies.
Only one of them was during that particular time.
Right. So I don't think they...
Of interest.
Yeah. I don't think they followed up with the second body because it was obvious that it wasn't him.
Gotcha.
They probably researched who that body belongs to, but...
Oh, sure.
Anyway, I hope y'all like that. I thought it was interesting, and for me not ever hearing that as much as we've listened to true crime, you know.
That was a wild ride. You took me on
twists and turns.
A journey of Tony's and Frank's, and there was some Joe's in there. There was a Chucky in there.
Yes.
Well, thanks,
well,
Lena.
I hope y'all liked it.
Yeah, I liked it.
Anyways. All right. Well, we've probably gone too long for y'all. I don't want to have to do another two-parter like Candace has been
Sorry.
Doing. Sorry. So I'll let y'all go.
Oh, thanks for listening. And check us out on Instagram. We'll be posting some pictures from this episode. Oh, wait. I should probably tell you how to find us on Instagram. Cousins on Crime Podcast on Instagram. And then our email is cousinsoncrime@gmail.com. Send us, you know, your feedback. Send us a little note of support. Send us some case suggestions.
Or constructive criticism.
Yeah, constructive criticism. And if you really like our podcast, give us a 5-star rating or write us a review wherever you're listening now.
And if you know that your friends like to listen to true crime podcast, just tell people about us.
Yeah. I mean, we're just going to get better. I mean, every episode will just be better than the last because we'll just get better at this.
Yeah, I hope so. All right, y'all. Y'all have a good day, good night, whatever time it is you're listening to this.
Thanks, guys.
Love y'all. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest. Life comes at you fast, which is why it's important to find some time to relax. A little you time. Enter Chumba Casino. With no download required, you can jump on anytime, anywhere for the chance to redeem some serious prizes. So treat yourself with Chumba Casino and play over 100 online casino-style games, all for free. Go to ChumbaCasino.com to collect your free welcome bonus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.